Hello and welcome to Startup Chats. I'm your host, Ben Parry. We've got some really exciting startup chats lined up with entrepreneurs who have navigated the early stages of planning and implementing, I can't even speak properly, pre-launch marketing strategies, which I'm super excited to share with you over the coming weeks. Today, before we dive into those chats, I just wanted to share with you some of my own thoughts on business, entrepreneurship, and starting out. I hope you enjoy.
Hey everyone, welcome to Startup Chats. I've got Courtney White from Hewers Clothing, and we're just going to dive into Courtney's startup, really, how he went through the early phases. But before we do dive into the detail of all those sort of pre-planning steps that you took, which, to be honest with you, I love to sort of, you know, I love chatting about business and love sort of diving deep into you know, people's stories and gathering insights. Just share with everyone a bit about your business, really.
Yeah, so I've kind of head up my family's business, which is a Cornish lifestyle brand. It's all centered around the beach, the sea. It's, you know, we try and fit into as many niches as possible. So it's all very eco-friendly, keeping it small and keeping it controlled, handcrafted. I mean, it kind of started as just an idea around the table in the pub, you know, like all good ideas.
Perfect place.
It's purely online, apart from a couple of Christmas markets we do, and it's direct to customer, so we don't retail it in any stores. That's mainly to try and keep control of it because, you know, ultimately financially people want to try and sell the stuff what we want to sell it for, and if I was to sell it to them in advance there was a difference. That's kind of a bit of an upshot of it. It's I think when we launched it about 4 years ago we started it all,
and the 2016 roughly,
yeah, summer 2016. The idea came about when we were in the pub, probably about 18 months before that, and then the following 18 months was planning.
Who was in that pub at that moment? At that sort of moment, it was sort of born, I guess.
It was me and it was me and my brother and my parents and my girlfriend. We were all out for dinner anyway, and it was one of those nights in the middle of the winter where the wind is howling outside, the rain's beating on the window, you know, coming in sideways. I think we kind of just thought that there wasn't anything out there in the market that kind of stood up for what we wanted to stand up for. And there was nothing that really that did what we wanted to do. And it sounds like a funny thing to say, but I'm not a fan of men's high street fashion. I don't like the idea of fast fashion. I don't like the idea of something's coming into a trend. It won't be trendy next year, so you can throw it away. It just doesn't do it for me. I really wanted to make something that was really simple, high quality, and stood up for a lot of these values, I suppose.
What sort of core values, you know, when you talk about it, what sort of core values does sort of Hewers Clothing sort of stand for, I guess?
So the main one, there are several that have all got equal importance, and it's trying to combine those in one group of products and all the marketing that we do. Firstly, growing up near the sea and witnessing the consumerism get out of control, one of the big ones, I suppose, is the environmentally friendly side. It's a problem. You go for a walk on the beach and you just find plastic litter and waste and rubbish, and we're trying to divert away from the throwaway culture and move away from using that kind of material. I mean, it was always quite a thing from the start to try and make the whole business focused around sustainability. Mm. And we've we can proudly say that we've never, at all our Christmas markets and whatnot, and there's a lot of individual customers, we've never given out a single plastic carrier bag. There's no single use plastics in any of our production. Fantastic. All of our stuff is sent out in compostable mailers. I think one of the main things, and I go back to it quite a lot with when I talk about it online, is that we rely on people coming to this part of the country, the Southwest, Cornwall, wherever they're coming, because it's a beautiful place. You know, we've got these beaches, we've got the hills, we've got the beaches, we've got everything down here that we're very lucky to have.
And we sometimes take it for granted, I think.
Yeah, and it's for those reasons that people come here, and it's easy to forget about that. And if we had a business that churned out a load of rubbish, it wasn't very sustainable. It just doesn't make sense. It's a bit hypocritical to say, oh, come to my beautiful part of the country that I'm kind of destroying and I've got no regard for myself, whilst I'm making money out of it. That's not why we're doing it. That's the environmental side of it and the sustainable side of it. I guess another important part for people is, and these are kind of linked, is the family business and handcrafted element, which is, again, as the high street shrinks, sadly, people are turning to more and more smaller, niche, local. Support local is a big part of it. These type of businesses where they're not funding mass consumerism, you know, they're helping out a smaller business that puts the time, the effort, the energy into it itself. So that's another part of it. And a big part of it is actually people meeting us and the people behind it. Mm-hmm. When we turn up at the Padstow Christmas Festival, people, they like the fact that they've probably seen me online, they've probably seen the other people that we've got there before. It's familiar and it's rewarding. And so that's another big part of it as well.
People feel close to the brand, and they understand the brand, and they understand they get to meet the people behind the brand. So it's an actual authenticity, I guess.
And the more that they feel connected to it, the more likely that they are to ultimately buy things from it. And I don't like the way that a lot of traditional marketing is done. It's buy, 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 or try and sell, sell, sell. That doesn't do it for me. It doesn't work. As you will probably already know, the more you try and sell on platforms like social media, the more people are just like, sorry, I'm not having that. Switching off completely. So that is another big part of it, and it's really interesting, actually, the more you think about it.
100%. So get back to that moment in the pub when you're sort of planning. Was it how did you sort of come to the idea of creating a product, and a fashion sort of brand? Or I don't know if fashion brand's the right type of thing, but a brand sort of selling clothing and things like that. Was it something that you always wanted to do, or were you sort of like thinking about different ideas and looking at different markets? Or was it just that, how did you get to that point?
I think there's probably a combination of several different things meeting in the same place. I think, going back to the sustainability, there was always a bit of a feeling that what was already in existence wasn't very sustainable. So we wanted to put something in that space.
Did you have history of doing something like this before, or when you've met members of the family?
Nothing at all, which was really weird, actually, when you look back and you think, of all the things that we could have done, none of us had any experience in that. I mean, we've all got our individual specialisms, should I say, or experiences doing stuff, but none of us had any experience in brand or anything to do with running a lifestyle brand. But another of the things that that kind of joined us together was the fact that we had always had this love of the coast, and there's a lot of people out there who share that kind of view. But we wanted to create something that, that we could demonstrate our passion through. And it's a hard one to try and put your finger on. But at the same time, commercially, let's not forget, we've got honeypot sites like Padstow, which is where we've chosen to centre the brand around, that attract a lot of people with a lot of money. And commercially, you've got to think about, where's the money going to come from? I mean, if you were to say, I'm going to set up a clothing brand that is, I'm trying to appeal to people who, I don't know, let's try and say tourist market, that is, that there's not many wealthy or as many tourists with as much money going to, commercially you're going to struggle because there's not going to be any money. And I hate to make it look like it's about money, but in business, commercially, you've got to have a reason to do things. And
ultimately a business has to, you know, think about the bottom line to survive, to be able to grow, to be able to actually add value to its audience. So, you know, whenever you're looking at a business from the get-go, you know, you've got to consider, you know, is there a big enough market for it?
Yeah, completely. And, you know, if there's any doubts in your mind, what can I do to try and increase the chances? You know, we've all got to eat, so.
Yeah, definitely. But at the end of the day, if you can provide value, something that somebody likes and loves, then, you know, and everybody wins, then, you know, we shouldn't be ashamed of that, I don't think. So going back to, again, back to the pub, you sort of were, you know, in that little imagined, you know, sort of country pub, fires roaring, rain sort of hammering down, it's all dark, and you're sort of drinking your ales. I've sort of got this image in my mind now. So you're sort of strategizing, thinking, let's create a lifestyle brand. And and let's dive deep into that sort of moment when you start thinking, right, this is what we're going to do. What were the sort of pieces that you started putting together pre the launch?
I think that initially, because none of us had ever done anything like it before, we kind of had to figure out exactly where all the pieces of the puzzle necessarily come from and what we then have to do to get them. One of our biggest challenges was the fact that we didn't have any startup budget, we didn't have any money to put into this business. And you know, a lot of the time, one of the reasons businesses fail is because they've got too much money at the beginning, so they don't really consider the financial implications of chucking a bit of money at something or
That's an interesting perspective,
money.
Isn't it? Too much money at the beginning. So you just like chuck it and end up wasting it.
Yeah, it basically, and then you end up with nothing and you've committed all your money into things like stock, or which is, having too much stock is as big a crime as not having enough, in my opinion. But, and I think that another of the issues was, how are we actually going to sell it to people? Because it's all very well and good us having this lovely product and these really great values that resonate with a lot of people, but unless it's in front of them, then no one's going to know about it. And that was another big problem that we had, that we were like, yeah, well, great, but how do you sell the stuff? And initially we had an idea, we'd go around with a little mobile shop, it's as nice as the idea is and the fantasy, the logistics and the details behind things like that is really difficult. You can't just rock up in a really busy road or a busy car park. You've got to get permission. You've got to. The idea is very nice, but in reality, it's not going to happen.
So, would you say at the beginning it would be fair to say, because I think it's great to sort of learn from mistakes and sort of positive experiences. Would you say it was almost a case of pre-launching, you didn't maybe have a set launch date to begin with, and you were just thinking, you were just sort of, even a set plan, it was just a case of, thinking about ideas, trying to pull them together. Does that work? Does that work? No, it doesn't work. Let's try this. What was the actual date? Do you remember, was there a date that you remember thinking this is our launch, or did it just organically almost happen?
Well, one of the ways we decided we would try and sell it, I suppose, is by attending the Royal Cornwall Show as a trader. And looking back, it was completely the wrong demographic and the wrong audience type, in the wrong place, wrong time. Everything about it, looking back, was wrong.
But you've got to sometimes make those mistakes to realise that, don't you?
Yeah, completely. And I think, and this sounds like a bit of a funny thing to say, but a lot of the business was driven by the whole family had an input, and my parents were quite instrumental in coming up with ideas like how can we try and get this in front of people. And one of their ideas was at the Royal Cornwall Show, which is very agricultural. It's an agricultural association. That's not my target market necessarily. The event is only for 2 days or 3 days. So you're not going to get any tourists in there who are going to come and be on holiday. They're going to be at the beach in the middle of June. They're not going to come to an agricultural show, you know. And so that I suppose was the launch date that we started selling things, I guess. But prior to that, I had quite a lot of...
So there wasn't any build-up to that launch? There wasn't any build-up to that launch? Was it more like, let's practical, let's get the products, how are we going to manufacture it, how are we going to do this, how are we going to do... Was it almost like the logistical planning and then let's go to the show?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in the meantime, I was trying to... Without a product or without any reason for doing things, it's quite difficult to market it, especially when you're also trying to organise the logistics of when you actually launch it. So I think looking back, I was probably documenting a bit of the pre-launch process on social media. Although looking back, I didn't have a clue what I was doing, because that's one of the ways that I decided I would channel it and try and succeed with it. But yeah, I suppose so. Before the actual launch, we'd taken a few pictures of the products. I mean, it was very, very amateur, very, very, I don't really know what I'm doing, but I've got to do something. Yeah. And so I launched the online store probably about 48 hours before we then went to the Royal Cornwall Show. And I suppose that was the actual launch date where we could sell things on the internet.
Yeah,
and we could sell things in person at the same time.
It's interesting, isn't it? When you're sort of going on that journey for the first time, and it is sort of there isn't a playbook unless you go looking for it, of course. And to a certain extent, you know, I do think people have got to sometimes walk that walk and make mistakes and figure out, you know, that process themselves a little bit and accept there's no one solution to help with a launch, and it's just iterating and testing and trying. So the show, how was the show? Was that a complete disaster, or was it okay?
The weather wasn't great, so I think that didn't help. But it's one of those things that if you, just touching on your point there about having to go through these experiences in order to learn from them, if somebody tells you beforehand, you know, you're about to embark on this project and over 50% of what you do is not going to work and it's going to be a waste of time, no one would ever do it. So you need to definitely go through the motions with it, I suppose. The show actually, I didn't know this because I didn't really research any of it, but the first day of the show was only a exhibitors show, so it was basically people showing their livestock and their sheep and their cows in the ring. They were the people milling around. You know, had a few customers, but by and large, it wasn't what I was expecting. By the time the Saturday came round, we had a lot of more family orientated people, a lot of people there with their families, and it was actually really successful. People came and they loved the fact that it was small, and they loved the fact that it was us. And
yeah.
By the end of the show, we kind of felt like, oh, this is really, really great. You know, people, the reception was really, really good, and we had a lot of people giving us a lot of positivity.
They were your audience, so, ultimately, those holidaymakers coming from out of town. Yeah. Ultimately, yeah, they were the type of people that you were targeting.
Completely, and it's a funny thing, because a lot of people say, oh, well, what's the target market? What's the target market? And of course, you always have an idea in your head of who you're trying to sell your stuff to. Obviously, everybody does, you know. No one's trying to pretend that everyone and anyone's going to love their product. It's never the case, you know.
Well, actually, I think sometimes people do want everybody just to buy their product, and that sometimes endangers. You know, I can't, but you'd be surprised how many big businesses actually don't know who their audience is. It's incredible.
Yeah, no idea. But then again, we had quite a lot of people that I wouldn't have necessarily said that's my target market, but hey, you know what, if they love it and they want to buy it, of course anyone who wants it is always your target market. And, you know, even if they're not demographically in the category you're aiming.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully the point is your brand appeals to the audience, so that there's that attraction, that magnetism.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's moved on an awful lot since then, to the point where now I don't really have to make that much effort to get to, like, back then you at the start you try and do everything you can to make it succeed.
Yeah,
and you try and you're up all night trying to figure out how to do stuff. You know, you're, whatever it is, it's taking you forever because you don't know what you're doing and because you're so desperate to do it. And but after probably 18 months to 2 years, that's when you stop having to make all that initial effort, and it becomes a lot more seamless and a lot more efficient, I suppose, is the word.
That must be great news for anyone listening who's thinking about, you know, launching their own brands online. That actually, you know, there's a lot of work up front, there's a lot of mistakes that you'll make, but if you can get past those hurdles,
you know, I think it is a lot of work. Yeah, don't try and put people off, but whilst it is a lot of work, and whilst you're making a lot of mistakes, these are lessons that you would never otherwise learn. I mean, 100%. I can go and socialize with a group of my friends that they don't have it in them to try and launch a business. They're not interested. They've got their job. They're happy. You know, that's great.
Mm.
That is absolutely great. The ultimate aim for everybody is happiness. And if that's why people go, then absolutely brilliant.
Definitely.
But for me, I was never settled with that. And I think that there are lessons that I've learned commercially, probably more importantly, that I'll never not know now. You know, I'll always know these things, and the value that those bring is you can't put a price on it.
No, absolutely. And Courtney, looking back again, pre the launch, what would you say was the biggest hurdle, or I don't know, is there anything that sticks in your mind when you look back and go, yeah, that was something I had to figure out, that was quite hard, or took a lot of effort?
I think it sounds like a really basic thing, but I think one of the biggest problems, but something I had to figure out, was the actual process of somebody orders something. I have to, because back then things were made to order. I've got to then make up the product, whether it's printing it, finishing it, then I've got to package it. I've got to get myself into a system where this is consistently good, consistently rewarding. And then what happens if someone doesn't get their stuff? What happens if it's the wrong size? What happens if, and then all these things that I think that probably took, it sounds really silly, but that probably took the longest to really figure out. And just the whole kind of process and fulfillment side of it. It sounds like a really silly thing to say, but one of the first...
Not at all. I wouldn't have a clue.
One of the first... This will make you laugh, actually. The first time I set up my online store, I did it all through Shopify, and it's still with Shopify. I find it quite easy to administer. You know, that size business is quite easy to keep on that platform. But I made the mistake. We like the idea of everything being customizable, and so people could say, I want this color t-shirt with this color ink on it in this size. Great. That sounds great. From a practical point of view, it's like business suicide. You're giving people too much choice. You're losing the control. Yeah. So we completely cut that out. But at the beginning, I set up the product to have the picture of it when it came up, when an order came through, was of a white t-shirt with blue print on it. And I remember saying to my brother, isn't it funny that we've had the same order for exactly the same product print combination, like four times? Well, actually, that wasn't the case. That was just the photo I had stuck to the product. So I thought it was coming through the same color, the same print every time, but it wasn't. There were different variants. So I ended up sending people, I think about 8 people got a white t-shirt with blue ink on it when they had ordered something different. You know? So it was that kind of thing that I had to think to myself, how do I not make these mistakes? And once I've already made them, how do I rectify them? Because, I mean, luckily, customers, when they're buying from a smaller business, are quite understanding, but you do get the odd. I had somebody say to me, Amazon can send me something next day. Why can't you? And I'll say, well, go buy it from Amazon then, mate. So I think that there's a lot of things just in the simple how you're actually going to operate that I had to overcome. And it sounds really silly, but, you know, it's just the way it is.
No, definitely. And I guess until you actually start walking down that path, you don't... There's only so much pre-planning you can do, strategizing before the launch, because there's going to be you can do probably loads of it and thinking about all those sort of circumstances, but then actually inevitably as soon as you launch, there's something that you haven't thought about is going to happen.
Of course, every single time, and there will still be things now that, you know, like I said, 4 years down the line, that something will take me by surprise, and I think, well, I've got to have a think about how I do that. I mean, it's becoming less and less, but definitely, it's just, that's just life, and it's business, definitely. Really, I think, isn't it?
Definitely,
the fact that you're dealing with different people makes it almost unpredictable.
Definitely, and I think that's the thing I love about business. Actually, you do constantly learn and evolve, and experience different things. What would you say when you look back again? You know, if you were to launch, if you were to know what you're to know now, and you were to go back at the beginning, number one, would you launch a brand, a fashion brand, a lifestyle brand? And number two, how would you have done the pre-launch any differently, do you think?
If I'm being totally honest, I probably wouldn't launch a fashion brand. We are currently undergoing a little bit of a rethink in terms of how we move forward. And the fact that COVID happened and the Christmas festivals have all been cancelled is actually a bit of a blessing. It's quite laborious. When you sign up to a handcrafted human touch family business, you forget that actually, there's a bit of work involved in making the products. And, you know, families are all at different stages in life. I'm in my late 20s. I'm hungry for that kind of thing. I'm passionate about it. I enjoy it. My parents are in their late 50s. They're not interested anymore, actually. To put it bluntly, that's just the way it is. And and so the input at the start that they were giving in the manufacturing side of it, that's been withdrawn. So I've got to fill a bit of a void, and it's the typical problem that you get into when you're scaling a business up. How do I commit to paying for things that I'm not, that is a bit uncertain? And financially, I mean, it's a risk, isn't it? And so would I launch a fashion brand? No, but if I would, sounds like I'm hating life. That's not true. It's just a lot more to think about than you initially think.
Oh, 100%. And I think sometimes it's important to get serious when there's serious questions to think about. You know, it's not all, you know, fluff and roses and woohoo, everything's great. I think, you know, sometimes when you're the most serious, it's because you're really thinking about the detail. And it matters.
Yeah, completely. And, I think that a lot of the time you get, it's easy to get very caught up in the excitement of something new and something that you're passionate about, and you can lose sense of actually ultimately why am I launching a business. It's not to please the crowds, it's not so I can spend all my time doing something for no reward. Ultimately, financially, it's got to be viable. And you know, at the moment, this is a particularly poignant point because a lot of people will be thinking, you know, I've lost all my customers, my business doesn't work. And it's the same for any business. You know, if you've got, ultimately, if the finances aren't coming in, there's no joy in it, and it's no fun, and it doesn't work.
So look, again, looking back, what would you know what you know now, what would you have done differently, do you think, when you sort of in preparation to your launch? So all that's all pre-launch
planning. Knowing what I know, it's a difficult one because I know a lot of what I know because I've done it and I've been through the you've been through the motions with it. And what would I do differently? It's a difficult one because I'm grateful for the fact that I've learned these lessons and that I've been through it all, because that's something you can't ever take away. But I'm,
so even those mistakes are worthwhile, almost.
Oh, always, yeah. I mean, it's learning, isn't it? It's never a waste of time doing things like that.
So if somebody was to start and you, so maybe think of it in terms of like, if you were to suggest something to somebody who's, you know, going to go down that path themselves, you know,
and I know it's easy said than done, but I would probably have a conversation with somebody who had done it before, because they would be able to say, I'd recommend you do this, or I'd recommend you don't do that. And that's never going to work. Look at it, step back a little bit and just really have a think about it. And I think that would be quite helpful. But then again, like I said, if I had done things like that, I wouldn't come out knowing what I know and having got to where I've got with it and anything like that. So it's a difficult one.
No, definitely. So moving forward, what's the sort of future for Hughes Clothing?
So I was talking to Will about this actually the other day. I've got to make it less about the clothes.
And just to share with the audience, who's Will?
Will is your colleague. He's the he's easily the most talented photographer I've ever come across. He's a great guy. And
absolutely,
we were talking about this the other day when we were down doing some pictures in Cornwall. We were having a really nice day out. That the pictures were a bit of a, you know, part of it, but it was wicked. And so we need to make it less about the clothes, because they're the most laborious part. And one of the big focuses on, and one of the reasons that it's become quite a successful social media thing, is because it's values in sustainability. And not only, like I said earlier, don't we subscribe to any plastic rubbish that other businesses do, we actively go out and clear it up. You know, we've been involved with local charities, beach clean organisations. Last summer they did a 24-hour beach clean, and Will was with us that day, and we went down and we helped them. We sponsored it, we gave them some money, we, you know, picked up the stuff off the beach. We also, we did a big beach clean back in, we did a couple, I think we did two or three, at a beach in North Devon. It's so long, people never get to the end of it, and it's just like rubbish city. So we took a great big garden trolley, you know, one of these great big things I bought online, and it arrived. I had to spend an evening putting the damn thing together, but we took it to the beach, and we took about 56 plastic bottles off the beach. It doesn't sound like many, but you try carrying 56 plastic bottles at once, amongst other stuff, you know, fishing nets, all sorts of rubbish, you name it. So I'm trying to steer the business in a sustainable direction, but involving other people's products. And I don't have a problem with selling other people's products as part of the business. That's not a problem, as long as it fits the niche and it appeals to the customer. Then that's what I want to do with it. I've got various ideas for it, but it needs to be. I need to get thinking, really, because the time off of having to make the change over all this COVID period is probably going to go past very quickly. So,
Courtney, you should definitely hook up with 2 Minute Foundation, previously called 2 Minute Beach Clean. They do.
Yeah.
And you might already have, to be fair. Martin Dory and a few of the gang down there. They're a great bunch.
I should do.
They've got, they've got a new beach shop down in Butte. They sell some clothing and things like that. So I'm sure if you've got any spare stock that you might want to give away, I don't know, get in touch with them.
Send it over.
It's literally everything that they sell in that shop. 100% all goes to their charity.
And it's an important thing. I mean, I was talking to my dad about it, and I said to him, you know, when you were young, was all this rubbish on the beach like it is now? And you know, you get a bit of wood and you get a bit of metal probably from shipwrecks and stuff like that, but the problem is plastic. And he said that wasn't there when he was young, but
interesting,
you know, what the stuff that's washing up on the beaches isn't new stuff. We found a crisp packet in the sand dunes that the use-by date on the packet of crisps was July 1994. You know, I was just over 2 years old by then. My sister hadn't even been born, and this thing's in perfect condition. So the stuff that's washing up at the moment isn't today's rubbish. It's 20, 30, 40 years
100%.
Old.
100%. And, so, and we have a responsibility to our children, our children's children, to...
Completely.
To and you know, preserve our, you know, these beautiful beaches in this beautiful area. And I think it's great that more and more people are starting to, I think, be consciously aware of this.
Yeah, well, like I said, people come to this part of the country because it's beautiful. So we've got to keep it that way, and not only for generations to come, but you know, if we don't, we're going to lose it to the wildlife.
100%.
We're going to lose all sorts of stuff.
100%. I think it's great that, you know, Hughes Clothing are really sort of pushing that as a positive course. So, well done. But just to sort of wrap up, is there anything, you know, else you want to sort of share with the audience? Any other insights or any little snippets?
I don't know. I think it's one of those ones that if you're thinking of doing it, you've just got to commit and don't be afraid to make mistakes, because everybody makes mistakes in life and in businesses, and that's what ultimately sets you apart from the people who have never done it. Because don't get me wrong, I get contacted every day by people saying, oh, I can do this for your business, I can do that for your business. But in my mind, I'm thinking, but you don't know half of it, because you've probably not done it yourself. So I'm afraid that's what sets me apart, actually. And you know, whilst it's difficult as you go along, you're always grateful for it come the end. And
definitely.
You know, it's rewarding. It's a good journey to go on.
So you love what you're doing, and you wouldn't sort of change it, I guess.
No, not at all. I mean, there are different things I want to do in life, and ultimately sitting in a workshop packing up 40 orders a day or whatever, it probably isn't where I hope to be, you know, because
it's not as glamorous as it sounds, is it?
No, but ultimately you forget.
But you are your own boss.
Doing it. Yeah, well, completely. You know, no one's there telling you what to do. The rewards are yours, and you've got to 100%. Remember that it's you. So, you know, that don't let anybody kind of whinge at you for doing it. You know, if you're taking charge and you're doing something that is beneficial, not only at the moment, but in the years to come, then it can't be knocked.
No, definitely. You know what? I think it's very relevant in this unfortunate time with COVID, and so many people being made redundant, losing their jobs. You know, a lot of people will be now starting to think about, okay, well, you know, maybe I should think about doing something, whether it's your passion or whatever. So I think
Yeah.
These lessons are great to share.
Yeah.
You know, often that, businesses do rise out of these recessions, don't they?
Yeah. And on that point, it's, you know, with this online world that most people seem to have adapted to over the past, well, over the start 6 months of this year, it's never been easier to show that you're to show that you're good at something. Yeah. And I think that, you know, if I look back to, I don't know, let's say even 2008, I joined the working world after then. So I don't know what it was like. And then my parents talk of great big bonuses and all this stuff. It's just never happened. That's not part of life anymore. But even back then, if you were to try and start a business, okay, yeah, there would be some ways it would be easier, but by and large, I think it would be a whole lot harder than it is today. So I think we need to be positive and we need to use things to our advantage and just demonstrate that you're good at stuff. It's never been easier.
Awesome. Hey, Courtney, I'm going to throw a curveball in for you. Would you be game for giving any of our audience a little special discount? We could somehow figure out how to hack it.
Absolutely. If they want to, I don't know, it's a difficult one because I don't have a discount code already made up, you see.
We can figure that out in details later. I mean, I can maybe put some comments or whatever.
I'll tell you what, social media is where probably about 90% of our sales come in. So if somebody wants to contact us on social media and say, we've watched this, it's got to be right to the end and right from the beginning. Otherwise, it doesn't count.
This is it, because they'll only know about the offer right at the end. So
true. So if anyone comes and quotes your name to me or whatever it is, then of course there'll be a discount.
Fantastic. Awesome. Courtney, listen, so good to catch up. We need to get together.
Definitely. Enjoyed it.
In person with the social distancing in place, because it's been too long. We've actually, you know, we haven't caught up for a while. So,
yeah. No, definitely. It'd be good to have a beer or something.
Definitely. But, or maybe we should go to that pub that it all started at.
Yeah, I know which one it is, and I can tell you the table we were sat at too.
Brilliant. Awesome. Mate, listen, that's great to catch up. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I think it's great. And we'll catch up soon, buddy.